Welcome back to another New Era Flames podcast, proud partner of the New Era Hockey Network. As always, I'm your man, Cam Elder, at LZ14, two Zs on Twitter. And always, joining me through the other side of the screen, it's the Clowfish, Adam Clausen, at Adam Clausen on Twitter. Adam, how was your week last week?
Fantastic, as always. How was yours?
It wasn't bad, you know. Flames went 2-1. Unfortunately, the one was to Montreal, so that really hurts. We'll get there. There's some races on the weekend, so I watched the F1 race. If anyone watches that, Max took home a pretty exciting race. It was rain-filled, a lot of stops and delays, but it always makes it exciting because the one thing with Formula racing is, like, after 20 laps, the stretches are, you know, these guys are really far apart. They're never going to run into each other. There's a lot of crashes and stuff on Sunday because it was wet. So they'd have to, actually, one time they stopped the race and then do like a reset so everyone groups back up. And then there's like three or four yellow flags. So kind of the same thing. It gives people enough time to catch up and make a pack. It just makes for more exciting races. It's unfortunate when people are crashing and stuff. A lot of money involved there. But other than that, yeah, watch the races. I measured my yard. I'm going to sod it here. You know, just kind of, we had some good weather and then we had some cold weather. Other than that, how about you? What'd you get up to?
I bought a barbecue, put that together. Enjoyed Saturday, the weather. Went out for a pretty good walk with the dog and the girl. Nice. And I should start measuring out my backyard for some sod as well. It's getting that time of year.
Yeah, it's got a little yard. It's easy.
Yeah. It's not too big here as well, but still I'll be able to throw the dog out on the grass instead of have him go out to the deck and do his stuff. But
oh, absolutely. That's kind of the same boat I'm in right now too. There's not much grass out in our yard anymore, so I'm just going to sod the whole thing. Anyway, another couple other big weeks to talk about here. You got some prospect news for us. Couple guys having some big weeks for the Flames.
Yes, yeah. So we got a lot of little things. They're not necessarily just this past week from last episode to this episode, but we thought we'd bring up some news of the stuff that happened. Just some little things here and there. I'm going to try to nail the name on the first try. Dmitry Zvgrodny scored his first AHL goal. That's the kid in the AHL that's not Zagadulin with the big last name with a Z in it. Jan Kuznetsov's already suited up with Stockton, so that's looking good.
Yeah, it's exciting to see.
Yeah, and we got Heinemann. Heinemann's still that B-plus prospect, so for a second rounder, that's an awesome. You'd be happy with a B-plus prospect in the first round, honestly, I would think. He seems like he's going to adapt really well to the NHL game. You were telling me before that he's known for that. He's been able to throw his game to the European style and then throw it back to wherever he is. He can adapt to that, and that's going to be really good because that's kind of one thing a lot of these European players do end up kind of that's their downfall is they can't adapt to the NHL game and the ice and the size and the different speeds.
That's kind of been the word coming out on this kid too, is that he's almost like a chameleon and whatever league he's at. He just really adjusts to the league he's in. And by all the accounts and all the scouting reports, it sounds like he's most suited for the North American ice and the North American game. So really can't wait till he gets over here and see what he can do on the smaller ice surface for sure.
Yeah, and then we also got Ryan Francis. He's having a heater right now. He's playing really good. He's looking like a diamond in the rough or a gem of the draft. He was a fifth-round draft pick. He had a hattie in his first game, so 3 goals, 1 game. First game with the St. John Sea Dogs. He's also playing with Jeremy Poirier now. And Poirier, he's got 9 goals, 28 assists, and 37 points in 33 games. Only underlying stat there is that he's a -3, so it is a high-scoring league, but you'd hope that maybe he'd be a plus player, but that's still really good to see. And then Francis actually has 10 goals, 19 assists, 29 points in 17 games this year. So that's pretty good for a fifth round draft pick, I think personally. And for a team that the league says they don't have good prospects, all these guys that weren't really big names are really starting to develop and show that they're going to possibly get a good punch at the NHL or a good call up from the AHL every once in a while. And then you still got all those picks coming up in the next couple of years here. So you're really going to be able to fill the cabinets with your prospects here. And then you're not going to be a team without any of these prospects anymore. So a lot of promise coming up right now. And then you got Connor Zary. He got his captaincy with the Blazers. So that's good. Shows he's got that leadership quality. He had 4 assists in 1 game. So it's looking really good for the Flames prospects right now. You got all those picks coming up in the next year, next couple of years, and you can really fill the cabinets and not be a team that doesn't have a solid prospect pool. So it's looking really good and a lot of exciting things to come. Hopefully they can keep on their heaters right now and just keep it up. Flames prospects, it's looking really good right now.
Absolutely. So we touched on it on the opening of the show. Flames going 2-1 last week. They had the 3 games, 1 against Toronto, 2 against Montreal. We really needed both wins against Montreal. We end up splitting it 1-1, take the game against Toronto. It's unfortunate to lose to Montreal. It hasn't squashed the hopes, but it makes them really dim. We have Ottawa coming up tonight. Last week, you know, I thought the Flames, all 3 games, played really good. Even the 1 loss to Montreal, I think there's like 3 or 4 posts. I know the Kachuk post is going to haunt me if we miss the playoffs for a little bit. Like, that was wide open net. You hate to see it. But I thought the Flames played good. I thought all the lines were moving. I thought they controlled a lot of the play across all 3 games. Coming into Ottawa tonight, I know we saw the projected lines yesterday at the practice, and we noticed a little upgrade from the bottom 6 into the top 6 again. We must have been missing them up there, but I noticed Brett Ritchie's back up on the second line with Monahan and Magny, and then Dubé's getting demoted back to the 4th. I don't like this at all, especially the way they were playing. I would have just kept rolling the lines as it is. Fish, you seeing anything different here? Like, do you, in your mind, can you come up for any reason why Richie's back up in the top 6 playing with Magny and Monahan?
I don't have a reason off the top of my head, but I might be able to fake a reason. But the one thing I want to touch on first is that Dubé goes all the way down to the 4th. Which is kind of mind-blowing to me. He's not playing bad or nothing like that. Why not just put Nordstrom on the 4th and you'll have Dubé on the 3rd still if you really have to bring Richie up? I don't know if Richie's the scariest man on this planet and's going to try to scare away little Stützle and all these younger, potentially smaller Ottawa guys tonight. But I have no reason why they would demote Dubé that heavy so quickly and throw Richie right back up. I don't know. Do you think Richie had a second liner game?
I'm glad you asked, actually, because if you watch that game there on, I believe it was the Friday game, Richie had a open ice slot shot, golden opportunity. No one around him. I think he missed the net worse than Monahan missed it 2 weeks ago. I think he was like 20 feet wide and there wasn't even a defender around. And it's like, how did this guy played 20 games in the top 6, let alone the next game. Now he's back skating with the top 6. It's mind-blowing. And for Dubé, I mean, he shouldn't be getting demoted regardless, but I think it's just a case where that third line is working so well. You're not going to mess with the third line the way Sutter rolls his lines anyway. I don't think there is a third line, fourth line. He's going to roll them all quite a bit. He rolls through all his lines quite a bit. They all play quite evenly. When you look at like Lindholm's, Goudreau's, Kachuk's minutes, they're all down since Sutter's been back, sorry. And then you look at guys like Lucic, Backlund, Magny, Richie, these guys' numbers are all up. So he seems to roll his team and is pretty confident rolling his team forward. With that being said, again, that almost kind of comes back to my reason of why is Richie playing with Monahan and Magny tonight? especially against Ottawa, who's been giving you troubles. And I feel they've been giving them troubles because they're a young team that loves to run and gun, and they got skill there. And the easiest way for them to flourish is run and gun. And I feel like the Flames have welcomed that every matchup with them and just tried to outrun and gun the young legs. And you put a, you know, a stone skater like Richie on that top six, I don't think he's going to be running gunning tonight with anyone. And I mean, you look to his center, Monahan's not a runner gunner himself. The only one on that line who's going to keep pace with these kids tonight is Magny. So, you know, I feel like this is a tall task of Magny coming into tonight's game to kind of carry the play for that line.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And hopefully you can keep up how he's been playing with all that effort. So I don't know, maybe that's what they see, that Magny might be able to dictate some energy on that line. But it is going to be a tall task for Magny. And it just seems like they're splitting up the success, in my opinion. I don't see why I split up the success right now in such a crucial time. Maybe Dubé's got a lingering injury and he's just wants to play still. Like, we've seen that before with some people, that they want to keep playing, but okay, we'll throw you on the fourth line, do what you got to do. You're going to come up against lesser NHL players. Maybe that'll make you look a little decent out there and not totally shot in the leg. So I don't know, maybe it's some sort of injury that he just doesn't want to sit out on and he wants to be here for the stretch.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. If a guy's hurt and he's hurt that bad where it's affecting his play, especially right now, you wouldn't even play the guy. You'd get someone in there who's healthy and could give you their all.
So, yeah, that's true.
We'll see how it goes tonight in Ottawa. They got a 3-night rest after this. So lines could change if they don't perform. But the thing that sucks about this is they have to perform. Like, this is – they're all must-wins, essentially. We have some numbers we'll get into a little later, but – I mean, a team like Ottawa, this is one you want to win. And this is a team that has been giving you fits all year. Exactly. You know, if you could have handled your business like Edmonton did, we wouldn't even be in this situation right now. But,
exactly.
Ottawa's had Calgary's number for whatever reason. Maybe it's the young legs, run and gun style they like to play, and we've kind of welcomed that in all our matchups with them. But, we'll see how the lines go today with Richie. Other than that, I didn't see no changes. Hanifin's still out there, which I thought, after Friday, that collision the boards, I thought we lost him for the year. I thought for sure a collarbone, best case scenario, separated shoulder, which he's still out for a couple weeks. Collarbone, he's done for the year. You know, guy misses a couple shifts, he's back on the ice. Unbelievable. Kid's a bull.
Sure. Yeah, I've broken my collarbone before, and I just the way he was holding his arm, and I texted you right away. I was like, well, there goes Hanifin with the broken collarbone, because that he looked like he couldn't even move his arm whatsoever. And when I broke my collarbone, I didn't know it, but every time I tried to run with my arm and move it at all, it just died down right when I got to a certain point. It would just go dead. So that's really what I thought right off the bat. That was my semi-professional doctor, physiotherapist report.
Yeah, I've been on the ice with guys who have broken their collarbone with way less of a collision. So I thought for sure. I've separated my shoulder, so like I could tell what that looks like, the way his arm was hanging. Like, it's not the most pain in the world. It's just kind of uncomfortable. But I mean, your arm's hanging out of its socket, so it's not very usable. So I was thinking, hey, at best case scenario. But it was none of the above. A couple shifts later, kid's back out there.
Yeah, I kind of thought I noticed him like holding the bottom of his stick with his arm that got hit, like he ran into the boards with. I kind of noticed him almost trying to favor it a little bit. He was still trying to work into it right after. And I was kind of a little scared there to see if maybe he was just toughing out the rest of that game too, and to see if maybe some report that he is going to be out and he just wanted to finish that game. Cause I just thought he looked a little different with handling his stick. I kind of just focused in on that right after that happened, just to see if there was something different. And from what I saw, I really thought that he was definitely lingering on that right. Or I think it was his right, wasn't it? Yeah. It would have been his right.
That was his left.
But I could just tell with that one hand, it was just way different than what it normally would look like on the stick. So he definitely was still a little uncomfortable.
Oh, but I'm really glad he's still a stinger or whatnot, but yeah, like if it was anything serious, he's obviously not coming back on the ice, and he was at practice yesterday. He's in the lineup for tonight. Puck drops here in half an hour. We need him, so I'm glad to see him still there. I'm glad he's not hurt. That looked nasty, but hey.
And with the way he ran off the ice after he sat down on the bench for a second there, that's what gets you thinking that that might be serious.
Yeah, you never want to see it. So we got the game tonight against Ottawa. A must win, but not as much as a must win as the next three. The next three games here, starting Friday, we got Montreal back to back to back. I think it's Friday, Saturday, then Monday. This is it for the playoff hopes here. If we're going to spin numbers, give Flames Nation any hope, we can do that, and we're going to do that. But if we don't sweep Montreal in this three-game set, you can crumple up that paper and numbers and throw it in the can. It ain't going to matter. This is crucial. Now, the good news about that, since bringing Daryl Sutter on, the Flames have had two breaks of over three nights or longer. And after both those breaks under Daryl Sutter, they've come back and got three-game winning streaks. One was just recently here where they went on a three-game winning streak before losing to Montreal. And then one was actually when Sutter came on and was hired, and they started off with a three-game winning streak and then started to lose a bunch. With that being said, after Ottawa tonight, they have three nights of rest here before they welcome Montreal at home for three games. So they'll be resting at home. And by all accounts, that makes a big difference. And if there is a trend, it's that the Flames can come out under Daryl Sutter and win three in a row. And those next three would be Montreal, which would be huge because it would. As it stands right now, if they won those three, it would close the gap and they'd be tied. Montreal still having the two games in hand, but it'd tie up the race. No matter how you spin it, though, if they don't win, they can't give Montreal a point here. They can't lose in overtime. They can't beat Montreal in overtime. They got to take it. Three wins in regulation. They have some good trends going for them, you know. I don't see Montreal as this uncatchable beast. I feel like they started the season hot and really mounted up a lot of those wins, and they have a lot of overtime loss points. So, I mean, they're more trending downwards than they are trending up. So I believe that's good. They have just a brutal schedule of games coming up here to close out their last 16. Just brutal. So these guys are going to be dogged. They have tough games. I believe they only play one non-playoff team outside of us once, and that's Ottawa. The rest will be against all playoff contenders. I believe they have, four against Edmonton, which unfortunately they've actually done pretty well. Three against Calgary, four against Toronto, one against the Jets, and two against the Sens. I was cracking some numbers today. And the best, most realistic way I can spin this to give Flames Nation some hope. As it sits right now, Flames have 41 points. Montreal has 47. So there's that six-point buffer they have that we can erase by just beating them the three times. That still doesn't handle their two games in hand. But with all that being said, if the Flames, that coming out of a break, are kind of trending in the way where they can win three straight with 12 games left. If the Flames went 3-1, 3-1, 3-1, so essentially 9-3 in their last 12, they would end up with 65 points, I believe. Yeah. And then if Montreal went 5-9-0, which is kind of believable with the schedule they have. Again, we're going to need help, but if they only win five out of their remaining nine games, they'd only finish with 57 points. Sorry, if the Flames went 9-3, they'd finish with 58 points. So they're actually in if they go 9-3 and Montreal was to go 5-9. So spinning those numbers, as a Flames fan, seeing how your team's played in the last 2 weeks, you can believe it. I mean, Montreal's not, like I said before, knocking off anyone's doors right now. They're kind of trending downwards to how they started the season. So for them to go 5-9 in their last 14 games, which is a very tight and compact schedule, and for the Flames to just four sets of 3-1, you know, I've turned myself into a believer. But like I said at the top of this numbers breakdown, if they don't sweep Montreal this week, crumple it up. Next episode, we'll be talking about prospects and contract extensions. So, Fish, now that I've spanned some numbers on everyone here, did I make you a believer? Where does that leave you sitting right now?
I'm still a believer because, yeah, like you said, Montreal is really hot out of the gates, and they aren't whacking anyone right now. They're not knocking no one's socks off. That, like, you bringing up all those playoff teams, it's doable. With that 5-9 record for Montreal, I think it's believable. If Allen doesn't perform like Allen's been performing this year too, and he has to come in a couple of games for Price, then that's also not going to be farewell for the Canadiens. You got the Oilers playing the Canadiens tonight as well, and they play them Monday, Wednesday. So these games that the Oilers are playing Montreal in, which unfortunately the Oilers have been defeated by the Canadiens for a majority of the year. The Canadiens have their number for some reason. But if there's any time for the Oilers to step up for the Flames, it would be these next two games. That would really, really help towards that. That already put them at 0-2, and then it's all you need then is 5-7, which is super realistic. Any team could do that. Like, you look at Toronto's not been flying, gunning wins every game. They're losing here. They're losing one there. No one's – it's almost a 50-50 record, which is what a lot of teams strive for, to be over that 50%. But the only other thing to that is that they're going to have to ride Markstrom a lot. And Markstrom is starting tonight as well, so hopefully he can steal a game if things aren't going well. But Markstrom's going to have to be on the top of his game. And seeing as these games are so important now, is it really that time to throw in a backup now? Or do you think you ride Markstrom to the playoffs?
You know, after last week and Markstrom taking on duties on the back-to-back and playing both those games, I mean, until they're out of it, it seems like they're going to ride him, make him earn his $6 million a year right now. This is why you're here. If he can come in, perform, and win out, we're in the promised land. So after last week and them not going to a backup after the back-to-backs, I believe it's Markstrom's net until the wheels fall off. And if they fall off, then we start to see a big Z, and maybe you rest Markstrom, and you probably start to see some injury reports or whatnot coming out. But we'll have to see. We're in the business of winning for this week right now. So to have Montreal go 0-5 in Alberta this week would just be a blessing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not counting on the Oilers. It comes down to the Flames got to win their games. So
yeah.
I'm not. But like I said, I'd love, you know, I got Draisaitl on my fantasy, so I'd love for him to just solo pump the Habs 5-0. I ain't never cheering for the Oilers, but I'll cheer for Draisaitl to just solo pump somebody.
Yeah, and if Draisaitl does end up solo pumping tonight, I believe he will become the highest scoring German player in NHL history, passing Marco Sturm.
Sturm would be my guess, yeah.
Yeah, so that's also up in the air tonight as well, so.
And then hopefully, for the Flames,
he's got his burners on, and he's gonna get you guys a win on his back.
I hope so. And for the Flames, we touched on it. They got 12 games left, 2 against the pesky Sens, 1 against the Jets, 2 against Edmonton, 3 big ones against Montreal, and then we still have 4 games against Vancouver, which I think we could, you know, not count on those points, but like we can get those points. I know Vancouver played last night and they won, you know, probably a lot of adrenaline, excitement. These guys, you know, they've been cooped up. A lot of them have went through hell to get back on the ice. So, you know, I feel like it was a big emotions game yesterday for them. And just, you know, it's unfortunate what's happened to the Canucks. It really is. Like, you don't wish that upon anyone or any team and what they had to go through with their families and everything involved. But with that being said and what they went through, they have to play a lot of games here and a lot of catch-up to close out the season. And I just see that taking a toll on them. So by the time they get around to playing these games against the Flames, you're going to have a motivated Flames team, I hope, that's still on the hunt And then you're going to have a depleted suck and win Canucks team. So I think having four games against Vancouver is also kind of a good news thing for the Flames when you're trying to spin these playoff hopes in your head to keep them alive. Like I said from the top, and I'll be preaching this all week, it doesn't matter unless we sweep Montreal. But again, you know, after Montreal, you have four games against Vancouver. Hopefully you can capitalize that. And then you got two against the Sens. Hopefully you handle business tonight and can do it again. One against the Jets. They actually play each other pretty well. We know how last year's playoffs went. And then Edmonton, that's always, both teams always show up to play each other. So honestly, on any given night there, any team could win. Doesn't matter what the standings are or how teams are playing. When it's the Battle of Alberta, both teams come to play. And I, for those two games, I just hope they're trying something with James Neal on the first line.
The Vancouver series with the Flames, that's a four-game series at the end of the year?
I'm not quite sure, no, because I know some games got postponed. I don't know where our actual postponed games landed with Vancouver. I know our actual last two games of the season were against Vancouver, so I don't know if they just tacked on the back for the other two on the back there and made it a four-game set. I don't think that's what they did, but I don't have that in front of me right now, so I'm not 100% sure. I just know we have the four against Vancouver, but I don't think it's four straight.
It actually does end up being a four-game series at the end of the year.
Oh, look at that.
Between Vancouver. So, first of all, is Vancouver is only played, I believe it's 36 or 38 games right now.
38.
And so they still have space to catch up. I don't know how realistic it is, but in their minds, they're still in the playoff hunt because there's so many games back.
It's not like I was looking at that today. I was like, you know, like, are people forgetting about Vancouver? But to my point, I don't see whatever mojo they had last night against Toronto, I just don't see that lasting. Like, these guys got to be hurting. A lot of them went through hell. They were hooked on IVs. Like, I just feel like it's going to catch up to them after a week. 2 weeks tops of just games every second night and practices. So I just don't think they'll be able to maintain and are just kind of going to flicker out here to end the season. I could be wrong and I could be a little biased because I don't need another contender chasing the Habs right now outside of us. And I am counting on 8 points against Vancouver, but I just don't see them being able to keep up whatever mojo and energy they had last night. So I know they have a lot of games and they're only like 3 points behind the Flames, which is kind of embarrassing to say, but I'm not worried about Vancouver. My focus is Montreal.
The second half to that is you might, if Vancouver's out of the playoffs and they know they can't get into the playoffs come the last four games of the year, they might start sitting people and they might bring up some stuff and be a little more experimental. So there's a good chance that maybe you come up against a more favorable roster. So that's the other thing that would be good, that's good about the four-game series at the end of the season, is if Vancouver is completely out of the playoffs. So that's another thing that could be an advantage to the Flames.
Exactly. There's a lot of good here left in the schedule to believe that if the Flames keep playing like how they played last week, you know, they definitely have a chance. It's unfortunate they played so poorly the first three quarters of the year to kind of put themselves into this situation. But all that being said, you know, all the bumps and bruises along the road, a little bit of selling at the deadline, we're still here. Still here, and we got one lifeline left.
Yeah, and like, there's not very many. I'm just looking at the Canucks schedule right now. It's a day off game, day off game.
Oh yeah, they're gonna burn out. There's no way they can maintain what they had yesterday. That was pure emotion and adrenaline, I'd imagine, that really carried them through that game. Maybe they caught Toronto off guard. You're never gonna admit that you underestimated an opponent, but I mean, we're all human. If we were gonna go one on one in a game of puck, and I knew that you were just coming back off of 3 weeks of COVID, I probably think it's an easy out too myself. So they're not going to say that stuff, but I mean, in their heads, they're probably a little bit thinking, hey, You know, Vancouver's coming off 3-4 weeks. They haven't played a game. Five guys have maybe been lucky enough to skate. This should probably be an easy win in the win column. Unfortunately for Toronto, Vancouver had other thoughts. They didn't go through hell just to roll over and die for anybody. So they're going to fight with every ounce they have. I just feel like those ounces are going to run out here in a week or two when just the harsh reality of conditioning and all that just starts to weigh on them.
And their last 3 weeks of the season, the Canucks, to add one last thing, they don't have any easy games. They play the first of the month, the 1st of May, they play Toronto. So that's a tough game. Hopefully Toronto will win there. And then you got four games against Edmonton, one back-to-back, 1 day rest, Edmonton, a day rest, Edmonton. Then you get a day rest, a back-to-back against Winnipeg. And then you go 1 day rest, Calgary, 1 day rest, Edmonton. So you guys have the break in the series as well. The Flames have the break in the series. They have to play Edmonton on the weekend, and the game that the Flames play on the Sunday is off the back-to-back with Edmonton. So they're going to be burnt if they aren't being experimental at the end of the year. That is a tough, tough, tough schedule. So there's a lot of hope there to grab those points at the end of the year for the Flames.
Yeah, and exactly to that point. You lay out that schedule, their situation. I know when you look at the standings, we could sit here and spin numbers for how the Canucks are going to make it, but the realistic side of it, you know, COVID's real and this affects these guys' systems, and they're probably not 100% yet. There's no way their cardio is going to keep up with the elite athletes of the NHL.
Exactly.
Like no other teams had to go through what they went through. They were dealing with the variants and everything. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to hold pace. And I could be wrong. I would be amazed. I'll be the first one to come on the show and admit I was wrong. But I don't see that being an issue this time around.
Yeah.
Now, will I be wrong about the Flames making the playoffs? I'll tell you next week. I don't admit defeat yet. And on that, I wanted to touch on some power play lines here. I mean, the special teams is such a huge, huge part of the game right now. I believe there's a lot more penalties being there's a lot less penalties being called right now than there were at the start of the season. Maybe that's the refs kind of gearing up for their playoff mentality, the kind of let them play mentality that you hear is around the NHL, when playoffs come around. So with that being said, and less penalties being called, it makes every power play much more crucial to capitalize on. Absolutely. Now, the Flames power play over the last 5 years have been mostly down. They've had some really good spurts. This year, it's kind of been up and down. They've had a few different units out there that they've tried. So my question to you today, Fish, is if you're setting up PP1 and PP2 for the Flames, how are those lines looking for you? What are you rolling out?
I definitely got a certain power play one idea. Power play two would kind of just be like the guys remaining after that. But for power play one, I got my center and my right wing locked in for sure. And that would be starting center would be Lindy. And then you go Chucky on the right wing. After the faceoff goes, you pull Lindy. He goes out to the right because he's stated that he likes shooting from the right-hand side, even though that's not necessarily the one-timer that you would need on the left wing, which I'll get to, leaves a gap over there in my scheme of how I want the power play to be. But then you have Chucky slide to the front because he's got an excellent hand-eye and he can tip almost any puck wherever it is. I'd put Razzy on the left-hand side of the defense, Johnny on the right, and that leaves a big gap for my left wing because I don't think I would include Monahan, to be honest with you. And I was looking at the roster, and if you're going to want to have a one-timer there on the left-hand side, you're only looking at Lindy, who we've already put on the right-hand side after he takes the face-off. You have Levo, which could be an okay option. He's got the right-handed shot.
I thought that's where this was going.
Yeah, but then you have your favorite Richie, but I don't see Richie as a one-time type guy, and then Ryan is your real.
I can barely take a shot from the slot.
Exactly, so that kind of leaves a big gap. I don't know how you could play Dubé or Magny off their weak hand.
Well, I don't think Sutter's putting Dubé out on any power plays anytime soon.
Considering he's on the fourth, so I don't know if Sutter has a strange love for Richie, which seems like he does. Maybe he does line up on that first power play unit. But Levo, he does have a deceptive shot, and he's got a pretty good shot.
Levo's got a hell of a shot.
So it's not bad having him there. And then I guess if you go down to your second pairing, I'd still stick with Gio for now. On the D, maybe even do a Gio Valley on the defense, honestly. You got to have Monahan, so he'd probably be a center for me. Probably I want to slide in Mags, but I think Lucic in this situation would be a good guy to go in front of the net.
Well, you get your net front presence for sure.
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of looking at for this first power play unit. I picked Chucky because he's an all-around better player.
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
So that was the guy who negated Lucic being off my first power play unit. And I was thinking maybe Lucic could be the left winger, but then why would you want to have two net front presences on the first power play unit? You only need one guy up there, so that leaves Lucic.
Why
on
would
the
you
second.
Want Lucic finessing one-timers on your power play unit?
Exactly.
Dude.
Exactly. So that leaves like a second power play would be Lucic. You got Backlund. Like I haven't even spoken of Backlund. You got Dubé, Magny, Valley. You might give the nod to Valley or Hanifin, honestly, probably over Gio in my opinion, actually. So it'd be Hanifin, Dubé, Lucic, Backlund, maybe Magny. And that's what I would say for my second pair.
I bet. I mean, for me, myself, my power play one would be, I guess, pretty much what we're used to. I'd have Monahan, Lindholm, and Tkachuk up front. Now, the reason I like to keep Monahan and Lindholm together, especially for power play, is just keeping them, having two options for either side of the ice for the faceoff. You got a lefty righty, so they both get their strong side on which other side of the ice. So I think that's pretty crucial, especially when you want the puck to start a power play. So I'm going to keep those guys up front, Monahan, Tkachuk, and Lindholm. Then on the back, you have Goudreau, who's kind of your buffer and your bumper player. And then for defensemen on PP1, they've been flip-flopping Rasmus, Gio. I'm a big Rasmus guy. I'm actually going to put Gio up there on my PP1 for a couple reasons. He's got more experience with this power play unit, which I just kind of want the mantra of going what you know right now. And Rasmus, he loves clapping that puck, like just a vicious one-timer. He has a wicked shot. But the one thing Gio's not the big clapper guy, and he doesn't really take clappers from the points, but Gio is just such a master craftsman at just firing those low-risk shots and getting them on net, which for us, and like you touched on it, having Tkachuk in front of the net, like that's really all we need with our point shots from the power play. Yes, having a bomb is great, but if they're winging by your guys' head or missing the net by 10 feet wide and then ringing around the boards and leaving the zone and you got to go collect it anyway, it doesn't work. So I'm actually going to put Gio on my PP1 just because he's got such a great knack for finding the net and getting pucks through. And then he just... It's what you know right now. He's got way more experience on that power play unit than Rasmus. And like we're up against it. We keep touching on it all throughout every episode. So you got to really, we know it can work. It's like any unit, it goes up, it goes down. We need it to be up right now. I'd put Gio up there. He's going to find, he's going to get pucks through. He's going to funnel them to the net. Tkachuk's going to be their tip there. It gives you your left center and your right center to win draws. Johnny's there to buffer the power play. Then for power play two, I like what you said with Hanifin being out there. I just don't want to overplay him. So I'm going to go to Rasmus. Then I'd slip Valley in there just to get my Rasmus Valley. And they're both two offensive-minded guys that could both skate like hell. So they can both get stray shots and collect them out of their zone and reset the breakout. And then up front, you know, I'd keep Johnny on power play too. He's not playing that much right now. So, you know, it's not like ice time's an issue for this guy. He's not out there killing penalties. So I'd keep Johnny out there for power play too. He's your best offensive weapon by far. So why not play him in both power play units? He's not getting tired right now playing all these minutes. So I'd keep Johnny there, and then Backlund can center, and then you have your net front presence with Lucic. So that'd be my two power play units. And I don't think it's too far out of the norm for what they do, other than, you know, Johnny playing both units, just because I feel like, you know, we need goals. He's our best guy for that. Power play's your best chance of getting that, you know, having one less defender on the ice. Johnny ain't gassing himself by the end of the game. So, hell, play him on both power plays. I'd love to see it. What do you think of those lines there, Fish?
I really like that. I'm just all for shaking it up. But to summarize, I think we could throw in a little summary real quick now with the explanation. My first would be Lindy, Chucky, Levo, Razzie, Johnny. And then my second, I'm going to go with Monty, Backlund, Lucic, Hanifin, and Dubé. Did I say Dubé already?
Maybe. Yeah, and then I got on the point Gio, Johnny, Monahan, Lindholm, Kachuk. Nothing new there. It's all what we know. And then power play two, I believe the only real big change I'm making is Valley on the point with Razzie. And then I'm keeping Johnny out there. Backlund to center, Lucic. He's your net threat presence guy.
Yeah,
I'm crazy there.
With having Backlund, Lucic, and Monty on that second, though, you touching on the two-sided faceoffs for your first power play unit kind of got me in the mood to put all those guys together, because Lucic does take faceoffs and he wins them. He's very good.
He's actually really good at faceoffs. Well, he's a big, strong bull, you know. Like, you might be quicker than him, but, you know, try moving his stick to get to the puck.
Try moving him to get him off the top of the puck. He just stands over top of it. So, yeah, you got three guys to win the draws there then. So, and most people look at the power play two as being the worst line, which it should be. Realistically, that's why it's there. But if you have that much possibility of winning the faceoff right off the hop, it gives your second power play unit such a better opportunity to score goals and to put up some goals for your power play and get the 17th ranked Calgary Flames slightly higher on the power play percentage. They're 20% on the power play. They're still a top half team on the power play. And I think personally they could be doing better, like a lot better on the power play, and to have them really close to even the top 10 is only 22%. Like, they're really close to being a top 10 team, and they're not really blowing out of the water on the power play per se, but
they get really hot and they get really cold. I think you saw it. I don't think it was Friday's game. It might have been the first game of Montreal, but it was like, right off the draw, bang, set play, Lindy scores.
Yeah.
It's like a 9-second power play.
Oh,
they
yeah.
can be hot like that, or they can be, excuse me, they can be no shots on four power plays cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Another hot topic. Actually, I wanted to ask you a question that was going around with Marlow sneaking up on the most games played record. I believe he's sneaking up on it. He hasn't passed it yet. There's been a lot of talk, a lot of whispers, a lot of people asking people, is Patty Marleau a Hall of Famer? So I figured, hey, why don't we get Fish's take on it? Fish, in your eyes, is Patty Marleau a Hall of Famer?
That's a tough one for me. So Patrick Marleau right now has played 1,763 games. And Gordie Howe sits at 1,767. So it's really close. He's going to pass it.
Yeah.
He's going to pass it. Looking at the stats, he played with really good teams. He was a really good player. I'm not going to say he was a bad player. He was only a point per game, I think, four times in his career. which you think of these Hall of Fame players are just throwing up savage numbers and ridiculous things that only specific special players put up, right? Marlowe's been a really good, credible NHL player for a very long time, hence the 1,763 games. So that can get caught up in the Hall of Fame talk. Do I think he should be in the Hall of Fame? Personally, I don't. But do I think he'll be inducted? I think he will be inducted.
Oh.
Just because of the games played and that they've been a headline in the NHL for a while. Marlowe, Thornton, those kind of guys. They've been around for such a long time and they're a big part of the NHL. They've played a lot of playoff games. They've had playoff success to a point. They've been a perennial playoff team when they're together in their prime. They're a good team. But I personally don't think so. I think he will get inducted, though, just off the basis of the longevity of his career playing all those games.
Yeah, for me, like you said, it's a long career. It's really impressive, like, just to stay healthy in this grown man's game, night in, night out. Like, he's been just a staple of health. Like, he plays, I don't think he's ever played under, what, 70 games or so, unless there's a shortened season. Yeah. So that's right there. Pretty impressive. His numbers, you know, he's got essentially 1,200 points in 1,800 games. Not blowing doors off, like you said. The thing I found with Patty Marlowe is, and it's even to this day still today, like, the guy can flat out skate. His feet have never left him. He's been in this league, what, 22, 23 years. It's a young man's game now, and he can still skate with these kids. So, like, his feet have never left him. He's always been a great skater. But when I look at his career, I think you touched on it. He had two seasons where he was a point-a-game player, and that was barely. He's never, ever been in contention for, like, the big single-guy awards. You know, he's never been in big talks or consideration for a Hart or Rocket. You know, he's never got any of those big awards. He's never won a cup. You know, I think he's got two gold medals in Canada on pretty stacked teams. So, in my it's the Hall of Fame. It's not the Hall of Health. It's not the Hall of Longevity. It's not the Hall of Congratulations for setting the most games played record. In my eyes, I'm with you. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I'm kind of with you again on the fact that I think he will get inducted. Not first ballot, definitely not a first balloter. But I don't put him in the hall. He's a great player. He was a great community guy. He gave back to all the charities. Did all. I'm not knocking Patty Marlowe here. Great guy, great leader. I just don't think at the end of the day, when you look, you remove the name and look strictly at numbers and production, awards, considerations, accolades, he just doesn't stack up to the guys in the hall. The only thing he stacks up on is he's played a hell of a lot of games, and to that, hats off. But it's not the Hall of Health. It's not the Hall of I played the most games. It's Hall of Fame. And when you're in the Hall of Fame, those numbers are nasty up in there, and he just doesn't have them. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think he deserves to be there, but I'm kind of with you. I think he will get inducted. I don't think it'll be a first balloter. I think he'll end up being there just on the fact alone that he's played the most games in the NHL.
Yeah, and yeah, I also just pulled up Gordie Howe and Patrick Marlowe's stats just as a comparison, just to kind of see what they've both done in the same amount of time, I guess. So Marlowe got, and I know that Gordie Howe played in a time where the points were a little bit higher and everything like that. I'm going to leave one underlying stat that I thought was kind of interesting that I just caught my eye looking at this right now. But in all these games played, Marlowe, 566 goals, Gordie Howe, 801. Marlowe assists, 630. Assists Gordie Howe, 1,049. So that's 1,850 for Howe and 1,196 for Marlowe. But plus minus, Gordie Howe is a plus 87 on his career, Patrick Marleau is actually a minus player on his career. So that kind of says something too. That's kind of a, I don't know, like there are good players that are minus players, but I don't know. I look at that and was he always super effective? Did he always help his team when he was on the ice on both sides of the ice? He's negative.
I think the perfect example for like Marleau's kind of criteria, not games played, but like we have one of our own beloveds here in Calgary going to the Hall and Jerome Iginla. Guy who's never won the cup. But the difference between Iginla and Marleau is Iginla's got the single accolades. You know, he's got two Rockets. He's got a heart. He was on those teams and then some that won gold medals that Marleau was on. Iginla doesn't have the games played, but he's actually achieved the accolades, like the solo accolades, the most goals scored 2 years that he got for 2 years, and then he won the heart. So, I mean, for Iginla versus Marleau, you know, it's kind of like I like to use him as that example there just because it kind of shows that, yeah, playing the games is nice, but like you had to produce at some kind of elite level consistently. Iginla did that throughout his career. Marleau didn't. He struggled to be a point-of-game guy. He ends up being, like, not a point-of-game guy. So, yeah, for me, it's a no for Marleau.
Iginla's 200 games back on Marleau has 625 goals compared to Marleau's 566. I know Marleau's not a known goal scorer, but still, like, to see Iginla put up 1,300 points in that time, and Marleau's just at 1,196 and that many more games.
It so yeah, how, all to my
how
point.
How much Iginla did it in his time that he was in the league.
Yeah, it's a no for me. And with that being said, we're coming up on it. So as always, we like to close the show out. It's another exciting installment of the Battle of Alberta Question of the Week. Now for this week, in honoring Lucic's 1,000th game played and seeing as how he was played on both sides of the highway too, we'll go to Fish first. Fish, for the Battle of Alberta question of the week, what is your favorite Milan Lucic moment?
My favorite Milan Lucic moment on the Edmonton Oilers happened one night where just right after work, 5 o'clock, 5:05, I kind of wanted to go watch an Oilers game. So I hopped on StubHub and grabbed a couple of buddies. I think it was three or four of us. Last minute tickets, very top row. It was the Edmonton Oilers versus the New Jersey Devils, I believe. And Lucic got in a 5-minute brawl. And I had a couple of sodas that night, so I was absolutely amped. And I'll generally stand up and I'll yell for a fight or goals. I'll stand up always and scream my head off when they score, you know. But here I am, the top of Rogers Place, super steep, screaming my head off for 5 minutes and 30 seconds straight. The people behind me had to tell me to calm down, to sit down, because they couldn't see the game. I was losing my mind. It was, I've never seen a fight like that before, and I really loved that. That was probably my favorite moment, having Lucic here. It was a ridiculous fight, and it was shown around the league for such a long time too. It was on Sportsnet and everything like that. It was just cool to see that. We're sitting up there. When's this fight going to end, man? Like, they're still going. The refs let them go. They're dancing, taking their breaths, throwing punches back and forth. It was awesome. That was my favorite moment, having Lucic here as an Oiler.
Fair enough. For me, I mean, I think it's going to be just that. Lucic's 1,000th game last week was a typical Lucic game, but it's not only that. It's, you know, it can't be going without being said, like, the Flames organization did a lot and put a lot behind this Lucic 1,000th game moment. You know, you saw all the players rocking the shirts. There was all the videos, the messages from former teammates. You know, like, I feel like the Flames really rolled out the red carpet, per se, and, you know, made Lucic feel appreciated. And, you know, they didn't pull out any stops for promoting the 1,000th Lucic game. So that in itself I thought was awesome. And then the game itself, I mean, classic Lucic, throw back the clock. Guy almost gets a Gordy, ends up just getting assist and a big scrap. You know, he gets a glancer across the top of the right eyelid, a little bit of blood leaking out, you know, just classic Luch kind of look. Gets to maul a guy, you know. I just thought for sure, like, that whole 1,000th game just echoed his whole career. So for me, and everything the Flames organization did behind that game and promoting it and making Lucic feel appreciated and wanted in the city, like, for me, that was my favorite Lucic moment as a Flame, for sure. I mean, it's every night with this guy, just what he brings for us. So yeah, I'm glad to have him here on the team. I know what the contract is. You don't need to at me or tell me what his contract is. We didn't sign it. I know it's 5.75 mil. It is what it is. The guy gives you every ounce of that. You know, if he can't live up to that contract and skill, well, it's all the intangibles he does there in Calgary and for the boys and for that locker room that he lives up to it. He lives up to it way better than Neil ever would have. Absolutely. Exactly. But yeah, for me, in short, Lucic is 1,000th game. That was great to see. Classic Luch.
Yeah, and what a testament to his longevity, like you said. Like, he goes and throws down in a scrap in his 1,000th game, and that's what he's been doing his whole career. It's not like he's had a cakewalk to 1,000. He's
no, those are hard
body on the line every
Absolutely.
Game.
I
agree with you there. He's a good locker room guy for you guys. You could see his head was down here in Edmonton near the end of his stint for sure. He just needed to get out of here. And I like that he's happy again. I like seeing him. I like seeing him perform good with you guys. So.
Oh, for sure, none but love for Luch. But you know, that puts us up against it again. So here for all of us at the New Era Hockey Network, myself, I'm Cam Elder. As always, on the other side of the screen, that's Adam Clausen. Flames Nation, good luck out there this week, and you stay safe.
Gotta go catch that Oilers game. I also just briefly wanted to touch on before we leave. Also, you guys can follow the New Era Flames on Twitter as well. It's looking awesome. It's at New Era Flames _. So get that up. We're hoping to do some giveaways, some things with the account here when we get our following up. So.
We have some exciting off-season stuff planned.
Off-season stuff on there. Yeah, for sure. We're not going to go away if the season goes away. That's what we'll tell
you
here. That's
when the fun's going to start.
But on that note, guys, take care. We'll see you next week.